Hey y'all, how's it going? Welcome to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. Oh, well, good. I'm glad you like it. Right on, huh? Today on the show, talking. Also, questions. Well, that's the kind of talking. Tom Colina is going to be here. He's an expert on missile defense. Well, so-called missile defense. Anyway, I don't want to spoil all the fun by ranting and raving on that topic. Now, you know I got my own ranting and raving to do, but that'll just have to wait. But, yeah, man, so... yeah, this guy wrote a thing, and I thought it was good. So I invited him on the show, and he said yes. So that's gonna happen. Alright. The thing, I'll go ahead and tell you about it. If I can find it. It's at defenseone.com. I have no idea what defenseone.com is. You know what? I think maybe I should look into maybe bookmarking. Defenseone.com and taking a look there later on. Anyway, so this guy wrote this thing for it. He's, I was going to try to tell you his think tank here. Well, he's at the Arms Control Association. And a bunch of other thinky-tanky type stuff like that before. So that's good. That'd be interesting. Okay, and then I got invites out. Francis Nesbitt. I think he's my new favorite guy on Somalia. And Ethiopia is reinvading Somalia. I thought they already reinvaded Somalia. I guess they reinvaded and then they left again and now they're reinvading again? I didn't know that they left again. I'm sorry I had missed that, you know? I would have told you if I knew that the Ethiopians had left. Anyway, I told you the first time when Al-Shabaab kicked their asses out back in 2008, but that's different. I'm talking about they went back in 2011? Could have been 10. Anyway, Francis Nesbitt, he's an associate professor or something or other in San Diego. And I interviewed him one time. He had written something, I guess, for Counterpunch about Somalia. And it was real good. And he was for a good interview, man. I learned a lot from him and stuff because he knew all kinds of stuff. So I got an invite out to him. And then our friend MJ Rosenberg has a piece over at the Huffington Post. I guess it was originally published at Tikkun. Is that how you say it? Anyway, here's the deal about MJ Rosenberg, okay? Yes, he's a very liberal Democrat, this, that, the other thing, but that's all right. That just means that he believes in individual rights. He's that kind of, he might have terrible flaws in his belief system because of his liberalism, but one of the things that he believes is that, hey, everybody's somebody, even if you're a Palestinian. And also, he's, well, I just like the guy. He's a great guy, and he writes great essays and everything. But he's got a very unique perspective because he used to work at AIPAC. He gets mad at me for saying that because it was so long ago or whatever. But no, that's an important part of his resume. He used to work at the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, where their job is making Congress do what the government of Israel wants the government of America to do. So, he knows all about it. And he can say things, he doesn't talk like this, but he can say things in an authoritative way. You know, I'm not speculating, I'm telling you, this is how it works. This is what they do. This is what I would have done if I was there still. This was my job. This is how the arm gets twisted, and it's a former inside point of view. Now, it's been a while since he was at AIPAC, so it's not like, but that's all right. I don't want to know a bunch of gossip about what's going on in the hallways and the, you know, the Office documentary they're filming there. I'm under the impression is a horror story, but I'm not interested in all that. I'm interested in what they're able to make Congress do or not do. And so MJ's got this piece here, and you know what? I guess I'm willing to tolerate him building up the president in this case because it is kind of true. President took on the Israel lobby and won. It sure looks like. And on was to me... equal to any issue of our day in importance, at least short of the H-bomb stockpile that we've got to get rid of before somebody uses one on somebody's. Other than that, you know, America's hydrogen bomb relationship with Russia, this is the most important issue on the planet right now, at least as far as international politics goes, America's Cold War with Iran. And the big fake issue undergirding the whole thing is the Iran issue, and the Iranians want to make a deal. The deal, in brief, would be that they would, and I'm sorry because this sounds so stupid, but I don't know what else to call it. Somebody help me out. Somebody in the chat room write something smart. I swear I'll replace this line. This is the best I can do for myself here. Right now, they're already verified. The agency has verified the non-diversion of declared nuclear material in Iran to any military or other special purpose. Over and over and over and over and over and over and over again, every atom of their uranium is weighed and is measured and is where it's supposed to be, and none of it's missing. And none of it's ever been missing. The non-diversion of all of their nuclear material has been verified. So this deal would then be to extra super double dog verified the freaking thing. That's it. It would be not unlimited inspections, but it would provide for many types of no announcement surprise inspections and inspections at facilities far beyond the IAEA's real purview, such as, you know, which all includes actual nuclear materials being introduced into some kind of machine. But this would allow them access to centrifuge plants and rocket facilities and the mines where they dig it out of the ground and every other thing. And would provide for, instead of weekly inspections, daily. Basically, you'd have guys stationed there 24 hours a day working there from the IAEA. And anyway, it would just be extra super double verified. And then once that happens, if they can make that deal, then the nuclear issue is dead. At least in America. I mean, the Israelis at that point will still be able to cry all they want about this is tantamount to that and whatever. But if they get a deal, the P5 plus one that they talk about, that's the permanent members of the UN Security Council and their archenemy from World War II, Germany. But that's the United States, Britain, France, Russia, and China. And if they all agree on a deal with Iran, then that's it. The Israelis can bark and cry all they want, but it's already a done deal. I guess until Jeb comes, maybe he could come and undo it. Wouldn't surprise me. And it's not a done deal yet. Not at all. But that's the end. And of course, you know, I left out being brief. They would no longer, they've already stopped enriching up to 20%. That was part of the interim deal. They're only enriching up to 3.6% at this point. Only, industrial grade. Electricity reactor grade. Not weapons grade uranium. And they have centrifuges that they built but they haven't turned on yet. That they haven't added to their cascades yet. And so they could just leave those off. That's something that could be negotiated, etc. Anyway, there's so much room to deal, you see, because it's a big, fake, stupid, fake issue anyway. They're not making nukes anyway. They've already been verified for, 6 years now, 5 years, by the CIA and all American intelligence agencies. The Israeli Mossad admits that they agree with the CIA and all American intelligence agencies, and their opinion is continued to be, reconfirmed by every bit of information coming out of the IAEA. And now, you may have been subject to a bunch of right-wing propaganda, and somewhere in the back of your head you're saying, but wait, Scott, didn't I hear 10,000 news stories about where the IAEA is complaining about the Iranians not cooperating? Yeah, but that's not about the deal. That's an entirely separate issue. On one hand, a cop's in charge, the police are in charge of, at the end of the day anyway, enforcing contracts, right? But that's different than them just coming with a bunch of new rules and regulations about other parts of your life and telling you you have to implement all of them. And in this case, the Iranians have a contract with the IAEA. Come on in. Inspect this, that, and the other thing, just like in the deal. All the IAEA is complaining about are all the things that the UN has said that they have to comply with that are far beyond their obligations in the Non-Proliferation Treaty. They are under no real obligation to follow. In fact, we talked with Flint Leverett about this. I said, well, what if the UN Security Council is breaking the law? He said, nullify it. States, this is not a federal union. It's a confederacy. And the UN's mandates can be nullified. I mean, look, for example, reality. Hey, y'all, Scott here. First, I want to take a second to thank all the show's listeners, sponsors, and supporters for helping make this show what it is. I literally couldn't do it without you. And now I want to tell you about the newest way to help support the show. Whenever you shop at Amazon.com, stop by ScottHorton.org first and just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page. That way, the show will get a kickback from Amazon's end of the sale. It won't cost you an extra cent. And it's not just books. Amazon.com sells just about everything in the world, except cars, I think. So whatever you need, they've got it. Just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page at ScottHorton.org or go to ScottHorton.org/Amazon. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. If this nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone, we are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com. All right, anyway, so I'm glad I spent that first segment talking about Iran and the nuclear program and the nuclear deal and the whatever, because for whatever tiny little part it plays, I want to try to help to add to the consensus that, yeah, this is what the American people support. It's simple. It's easy. And, well, I don't want to, yeah, it is. If the Americans, which, because it ain't the Russians and the Chinese or even the British and the French behind all of this stuff. This is the Americans' fight on behalf of the Israelis, really. And if Obama just meant well, if Obama was Ron Paul, this deal would have been done forever ago. Hey, Iran, we swear we'll never bomb you. We'll never change your regime. We're not interested in that. Here's your security guarantee. By the way, we would prefer it if you would stay within the Non-Proliferation Treaty and your IAEA obligations and all of that, your safeguards agreement. But whatever. You know, anyway, have a nice day, guys. Let's do business. Everybody, somebody call up Houston, Texas, and tell them Iran is open for business. And we wouldn't have any of this crap. And he would have told Netanyahu, and I love Ron Paul because he's such a nice guy. He's not like me at all. He's such a nice old guy that he would have just told Benjamin Netanyahu, in all sincerity, I'm sorry, but I'm not going to do what you say. I don't know. Bomb them yourself if you think that that's really in your best interest. But anyway. In fact, you know, Ron Paul actually supported Israel's bombing of Iraq back in 1981. And he confessed to me on the show when I asked him about it years ago that, I mean, he was still saying he would prefer, you know, Israel handle their own foreign policy than America handle their foreign policy for him. But that was actually a really dumb move, because what did that do? That drove Saddam Hussein's safeguarded IAEA declared electricity facility and drove it underground, where it then became a unsafeguarded, undeclared secret nuclear weapons facility that the CIA didn't even know about and didn't even discover until the end of the first Gulf War. They had bombed the facilities and then found out what they were. And, of course, this is part of the legend of why Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld created the Office of Special Plans in the Pentagon to lie us into war with Iraq. It's because you can't trust the CIA to get this stuff right. From his own experience as Secretary of Defense, they didn't know that there was a nuclear weapons program there. So based on that, on their failure of 1990 and 91, that became his blank check to say, well, if the CIA won't lie well enough to get us into war with Iraq, we'll just have Doug Feith and Abram Shulsky and Michael Rubin and Michael Ledeen and their buddies in the Office of Special Plans make up the lies. So they did. All right, anyway. So the Iran deal, it's a good deal. It's a fake issue anyway. So whatever the deal is good enough to get rid of the issue as an outstanding issue. And America and Iran can be friends anyway. I got one more thing to say about this. I met an old guy who was trying to fix the air conditioner in my beat old pickup truck. Didn't work. But man, he was real sound on foreign policy. He was an interesting guy, and I was, you know, trying not to talk too much and was listening to him. And he was really good on everything. And we got to Iran, and he goes, "Oh, the Iranians, man, they just hate us. They hate us. War with them is inevitable. They just hate us." And that was it. Whatever it was that got us hating them, he never really asked that question. He was just sure, somehow, without really knowing, that they started it by hating us first, whatever it was. That's not true. And, of course, it's not a secret that's not true. Even the CIA themselves admit now about the history of America's coup d'etat back then. And, by the way, what was that all about? Why would they overthrow the government of Iran? Isn't the government of Iran the government of Iran? You know how they're right. Didn't you sign the UN Charter and all that? It says you won't invade or overthrow governments or violate the sovereign rights of other governments and stuff. Oh, it's because they're imperialists. And they thought that it was up to them to change the regime in Iran if they wanted a regime change in Iran. How dare this Mossadegh guy get himself elected and demand one percentage point more of royalties from the crew the Brits were pumping out of the ground there. Everybody always says, yeah, he nationalized the oil. No, he was only asking for, you know, almost nothing. You know, the Brits were taking all the oil and all the money. And they were getting nothing. And he said, wait, hey, what if we got a 0.5% of nothing? Could we get a 0.5%? And they went off with his head. So it's not like, well, yeah, but that was back in the Eisenhower years when America was an empire, but that's all over now. Because we're not an empire now. That was the kind of thing that an empire would do, you know, back then. But, you know, I couldn't name the time when America quit being an empire, but I'm sure now this is only just because of their nuclear program, right? It's not because they've defied us and maintained their independence from us and set an example that it can be done. Oh, no. Did I ever tell you about the time America seceded from an evil empire? That's all you need to know. So therefore, ipso facto, it couldn't possibly be one now. Because George Washington. Everybody knows that. Yeah. All right. Now I got to talk about this dead actor. I like this guy, man. He could have been in a Philip Seymour Hoffman. He could have been in 1,000 more movies. All of them pretty damn good. In fact, Slate even had a thing about, and I'm not about to gossip about actors for a minute. I have an important point to make, maybe. They had a thing about, here are clips from, it was 5 or 10 terrible movies that this guy was in, where he's phenomenal. And this guy is a great actor. He walk into a crappy movie, and his part kills him. His part is the only part that's any good. Anyway, he was a great actor. I really liked that guy. He was in a bunch of movies I liked, and yeah, whatever. And anyway, so now he's dead because he was doing heroin. And of course, what was it about the heroin? I don't know, but it was, what, badly mixed? Poor dosing? He wasn't quite sure how much to shoot. Maybe it was cut with something that wasn't heroin at all, but some terrible ingredient that shouldn't be in there. Maybe, maybe, maybe. And of course, it's the drug war that killed him. It's not a heroin addiction that killed him. Most people don't die of heroin addictions unless they have some kind of bad reaction. A hot shot, they call it, right? Uh-oh, this turned out to be way more powerful than you thought it was going to be. Or it wasn't nearly powerful enough, so then you took way too much, or whatever the hell the problem is. But, you know, anyway, it's prohibition. And it's madness. And, you know, I don't know if this is still a controversy. I guess this must still be a controversy. I remember in high school, there were people in Austin who were going to jail for passing out dirty, I mean, for passing out clean needles to addicts. They would go find heroin addicts and give them clean needles and say, look, man, I know you're junkie and everything, but please don't share your needles. It was a big deal, and they would get in trouble for that. It was a crime to do that. The logic there being, oh, you're sending the wrong message. Yeah, or at least that's the stated logic. The true logic being that, well, what do I care if a bunch of junkies get AIDS? You're legitimizing it if you give them clean needles, and the consequences of not giving them clean needles is what? Dead junkies? So, that was the attitude of the government. That was the attitude of the Republicans and the Democrats that implemented it. That was the attitude of the cops that were arresting people for passing out clean needles. And so, in other words, then, if you're for the drug war, then you're a genocidal maniac. What in the hell is the matter with you? How can you want to spread AIDS around the world? How can you think it's worth it to spread AIDS? Just so that you don't send the wrong message. Look at all the people that die of legal prescription drugs all the time. That doesn't send the wrong message. Oh yeah, no, it's a big crime to abuse prescription drugs too, right? We talked last week about the lady who died in her cell because her pills that could have saved her life weren't in their original government sanctified prescription bottles, but had been moved to her daily dosage thing that you buy at Walgreens where it has the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday on there. So she died in her cell. Because, gotta have a war on drugs. Just can't imagine living in a world without a war on drugs. And finally, we make a little bit of progress about legalizing weed in a couple of states. Well, many states for medical pot, which is great. I mean, that really is a big deal. And now finally just plain old legalizing weed in, heavily regulated, but still legalized in, Colorado and in Washington State and the business, the trade of it, the growing and the trading in it and all that is legalized and whatever. So that's big progress, but how, I don't know. I mean, I have to say I'm pessimistic. I look at the future and how many years has it got to be before people finally aren't afraid to be the one to say, man, we got to legalize cocaine and heroin too. And you know what? In fact, forget that stupid actor who overdosed himself. What about all the innocent casualties of the war on drugs in the countries where these drugs are produced? I mean, there's plenty of consequences for people involved in the drug trade in America, and it's horrible. And you know what? Not screw that actor. I like that guy, and I've known people who are junkies, and I'm glad that the ones who aren't dead aren't dead. You know, I'm not saying that. But think about the horror show of the drug war down in Mexico. There's a new movie out about that. Have you seen that? It's on the Pirate Bay. It's not that good. what's it called? The Counselor. It's got that one guy that the wife likes in it. Anyway, those cartels down there, they're monsters, man. They're basically, you know, they're governments in a way. They're warlords in a drug war. And Mexico's had all kinds of drug war problems forever, always. But then what happened? Then what happened is Calderon came and declared war, like, for real, and called out the army. And the army went to it for real, which meant what? Immediately, consequences. It meant payoffs got that much bigger for the military, and it meant that all the cartels had to arm up and toughen up all of their tactics for fighting their end and staying alive and defeating each other. And there are tens of thousands of innocent people dead, murdered by these warlords in Mexico, just south, our friendly neighbor. Man, you need some new stickers for the back of your truck. Scott Horton here for LibertyStickers.com. Aren't you sick and tired of everyone else being wrong about everything all the time? Well, now you can tell them all what's right with some stickers from LibertyStickers.com. At LibertyStickers.com, they're against everything, so you know they're good on your issue, too. Whether it's the wars, police state, gun laws, the left and right, or the president, LibertyStickers.com has hundreds of choices so you can find just the right words to express your opposition and contempt for those who would violate your rights. That's LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. And our guest today, looks like our only guest we'll have today, is Tom Z. Colina. He is at the Arms Control Association there. And I don't know if it says his exact title on the page I'm looking at. It says a bunch of former titles. Well, I'll ask you. Hi, Tom. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Oh, no. Your phone sounds absolutely terrible all of a sudden. Try again.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, man. No. You know what? I don't know where the glitch is, sir, but I'm very sorry. We'll have to call you right back.
Okay. I'll be here.
Sorry, buddy. We'll try again here. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Since 1989, FFF has been pushing an uncompromising moral and economic case for peace, individual liberty, and free markets. Sign up now for The Future of Freedom, featuring founder and president Jacob Hornberger, as well as Sheldon Richmond, James Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and many more. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's fff.org/subscribe. And tell them Scott sent you. All right.
Well, I don't know what happened to the dang technical difficulties there. I blame Bill Gates, man. It seems like all my technical difficulties are usually his fault anyway. Let's try again. Hi, Tom. Welcome to the show.
Great. Thank you. How are you?
Oh, my goodness. Well, this is the part where I beg your forgiveness, sir. I don't know why your audio is so terrible. It's something here, my fault, my end, and I can't hear you. You sound like you're a tiny little person in a kazoo. So that won't work. Maybe we can do it later on this week. Again, my apologies. Man. What could it be that makes him sound like that? Didn't he sound terrible to everybody? What was it? I mean, come on, man. What is this? Well, anyway, I'm not going to mess around anymore live on the air. We'll just have to work it out. God dang. Man, last week... 2 days. Well, a day and a half worth of... Yeah, it was bad last week. And now, again, technical difficulties. Completely different ones. Huh. I wonder if maybe just that XLR wasn't all the way in there good. Oh, well. These things happen. Hey, it's live radio, man. What are you going to do? Sometimes on live radio, things break. And then you go ahead and complain on your own anyway without guests because it's so fun and easy to do. If you're me, that's my thing. I shouldn't talk about myself in the second person like that. Apologies. So there's this new website, War is Boring. And it's at this new thing that's sort of like Blogger, only it's different. I don't really understand it. It's called Medium. And then so War is Boring. It's like Tumblr, right? Medium is like Tumblr, I think. Like Blogger or Typepad, something like that. Anyway, these guys, they got this thing and they write this great stuff, great coverage about the wars, and they don't seem like they're hell-bent right-wing warmongers or anything like that. But man, they're not anti-war either. So everything ends with, hopefully this time intervention will work out great or something. But it really bothers me because... otherwise, I'd be running these pieces at antiwar.com. I get to choose the views on antiwar.com a lot of the times. And a lot of these, you know, Ethiopian troops going back into Somalia. Man, if only this, you know, it ends with the African Union has made a huge gamble. Let's hope it has good luck. When, of course, the last sentence should be, America should stop backing any of these countries invading and occupying poor little Somalia. You're the ones what did it to them. Now knock it off and leave them alone. But so they're just not libertarians is their problem. Which is really too bad because, man, they've been writing some really good stuff. There was something else that I read. Was it about Iran? No, it wasn't about Iran. Was it about Syria? Well, I read some great stuff about the F-35. They had another one about another Air Force plane that was a gigantic waste of billions of dollars that doesn't even work and whatever. Anyway, I forget, but I keep reading articles at War is Boring that are just awesome. And then they end with not even warmongering, but just like a warmongering trope. It's like, oh yeah, well, you know, gotta have battleships or what, you know. Huh? Anyway, so... nuts to intervention, but I think I'll go ahead and still recommend this site. I bookmarked it. I'm looking at it, because I'm learning stuff. like Ethiopia's going back into Somalia. They're pretty honest about the brutality of the original Ethiopian invasion. They didn't so much mention that George W. Bush made Meles Zenawi do it. But anyway, it's pretty good. Let's see. Well, this guy asked me if I'm still doing a show. On now. LibertyExpressRadio.com. How do you like that for still doing a show? All right. Tom Kalina. I was going to say his name wrong when I introduced him. It's a good thing his phone wasn't working. Did I call him Collins when I was introducing him there? I bet I did. God dang it. Anyway, he wrote this great thing for Defense One all about missile defense. I hope I'll get him on. I'll save it for when he's on later in the week. It's about how missile defense, it's not so much that it's a big joke, and this isn't his point, but ultimately it is the point, mine, which is the same thing as the objective, the point. And that is that missile defense is a gigantic welfare program for people who are already extremely rich. That's all it is. It's a hoax. It's a boondoggle. And what that means is when somebody who's not desperately trying just to stay alive and get by collects welfare. They call it the mixed economy. It's a quasi-free market, Scott. That's what they told me when I was a kid. It's a quasi-free market. Yeah. Welfare for people who are rich enough to get on welfare. And who immediately scapegoat the poorest as soon as it comes time to balance the budget. Luckily, it never comes time to balance the budget. But anyway, and I'm not for the welfare state at all. I'm for abolishing all of it tomorrow. But it seems like, you know, food for hungry people would be the last thing you'd want to cut. Other than the fact that it's the bribe. The welfare state is the bribe to make you think that any of this is about your security at all in the first place when it never was. You know what I think you ought to do? I think you ought to read some Murray Rothbard. That's just a suggestion. But Murray Rothbard, he says it like this. He says, in no case did a group of people say, man, we need a security force real bad. Let's create a government and then create one, really. Nah. It's always the looters and the colluders and the thieves and the strongest ones who come and loot the town who decide to stay. We will loot you, but we will keep the other looters at bay. And you will call us your security force. And it'll be hilarious to us and continually confusing for you. But there you go. That's how states come about. They take power. That's what they are. Power. Not some... You know, there's a guy who interviewed Tom Woods and who else was with him? Oh, it's Tom Woods and Doug Casey being interviewed on Dallas or Fort Worth Access Channel TV. And the guy, he had the greatest paraphrase, the guy who was doing the interviewing, actually. He was paraphrasing a caller to his show. He's a libertarian, so he's saying government is violence. And so this lady calls in, and she says to him, no, I don't know what you're talking about. You know, government is that entity, or maybe she said institution, but I think it was more metaphysical than that. That entity through which we all relate with one another. What? And you can tell she was still sort of desperately trying to form exactly what she conceived of government as being as she was saying it. It's kind of confusing. But what she really sort of, I mean, you can tell what she meant. It's the one thing we all have in common. And it's the thing that we use to do things to each other, basically. And to an American, to maybe to all people, that's what an opinion is. It's what you think power should inflict on others, or in which circumstances you think power should be inflicted on others. You'll hardly hear anyone say, well, I think being gay is really grody, but what do I care? It's your body and your life, so by all means, do what you want. No, no, no. If you think it's grody, you think it should be a crime. Right? That's your opinion. If you have an opinion. Whatever it is. That might have been a bad example. Someone's getting mad at me. I'm just saying that that's what people think. Is that whatever they think is what the federal government should force everyone else to go along with. Not just how they would prefer it. If they could have it their way, you know, sort of in a magical kind of way. Well, you know, wouldn't it be nice if instead of roads, we just had skateboard ramps and ledges everywhere? Not sure if I have the authority to force all of you to go along with that, but I guess maybe I do, right? If I could get the lobbyists together and, you know, get some coke and whores for just the right city councilmen and county judges. I could get on a gigantic welfare project, big construction project, right? Oh, you know what you guys need? You guys need for somebody to redo Auditorium Shores again. You know what needs redoing? Auditorium Shores. I'll tell you what. I'll bribe you with a little bit of money, and then you give me a lot of everybody else's money. Yeah, that's the American way right there. But don't you be black and a single mom, though, because or else everybody's pointing their finger at you. Oh, you lost your job, did you? You people always trying to exploit the rich, the poor, helpless rich, at your mercy, with all of the unlimited political power that you exercise all the time? You poor, weak, powerless people? You can imagine me shaking my fist in the air, right? Like an old man complaining at kids on his lawn. You poor, desperate, weak, powerless people, stop ruling this world. You're bankrupting the government. They can hardly afford to subsidize the new Tesla. All right. Anyway. Hey, you could be like Andre and donate $30 to the show. That's what Andre just did. ScottHorton.org/donate. That's part of the free market, too. Donating to libertarian radio show hosts. And you know what? As long as I'm talking a little bit about libertarianism here, I just want to comment real quick on Cass Sunstein, who is the better half of Samantha Power, right? Or which one would you choose? Anyway, I could totally see those two together without having ever met either of them in person, but just what they're about. Oh, man, I'm talking through the break. Liberty stickers, y'all. Liberty stickers. And, oh, off now. I got to play this. Don't worry about things you can't control. Isn't that what they always say? But it's about impossible to avoid worrying about what's going on these days. The government has used the war on guns, the war on drugs, and the war on terrorism to tear our Bill of Rights to shreds. But you can fight back. The 10th Amendment Center has proven it, racking up major victories. For example, when the U.S. government claimed authority in the NDAA to have the military kidnap and detain Americans without trial, the nullifiers got a law passed in California, declaring the state's refusal to ever participate in any such thing. Their latest project is offnow.org, nullifying the National Security Agency. They've already gotten model legislation introduced in California, Arizona, Oklahoma, Missouri, and Kansas, meant to limit the power of the NSA to spy on Americans in those states. We'd be fools to wait around for the U.S. Congress or courts to roll back Big Brother. Our best chance is nullification and interposition on the state level. Go to offnow.org, print out that model legislation, and get to work nullifying the NSA. The hero Edward Snowden has risked everything to give us this chance. Let's take it. Offnow.org. All right. So anyway, yeah, I was talking about missile defense and how it's all just a big smell fair program for rich people. Lousy rich people and their welfare. Collecting tax dollars all the time. And anyway, yeah, so then I got to talking about libertarianism. Oh, I'll get back to the missile defense thing in a minute. I just want to make fun of Cass Sunstein and Samantha Power for a minute.
Samantha Power, who's the poster child for killing people because you're such a loving Democrat. Oh, and you can't stop crying because you love the little brown people so much that you have to wage a war against them in order to free them and save them. Oh, my God. Kill yourself, lady. Hang yourself from a rafter. ASAP. What a terrible person. Jesus Christ. Anyway, and then her husband, Cass Sunstein, I kind of like him. Like, as Jessica Raimondo wrote about him last night in today's article on antiwar.com. This guy is such a crank. Keep talking, pal. About how, yeah, we need to rewrite the First Amendment so that it says that. Yeah, but of course, you know, government needs to set the proper parameters for people's discussions. What? Yeah, anyway, he attacks people for wanting to keep a religion out of the state. He attacks people for being paranoid about government attempts to disarm them. And anyway, my point, you can go read Raimondo. He's got a whole take on it that I think is great. But anyway, that's antiwar.com/Justin. But my take on it is along the lines of how scared liberals are of libertarianism these days. And I think Democrat types, especially centrist, middle-of-the-roady, liberal, Democrat-y sort of, and more progressive movement-y types too, I suppose. I don't know. They sort of think that the young and cool are by default leftists. But, you know, or of some kind, you know, liberals of some kind or something. And I think actually that's probably true of some kind, but then that's where Ron Paul comes in. Because Ron Paul changed the world by running for president in 2007 and 2008. And what Ron Paul represents is liberalism before Hegel and Marx came and ruined it and turned it into communism or, you know, socialism, at least. And so, in other words, classical liberalism. Individualism, as opposed to the old order, as opposed to the state and the church and the tyrants of Europe. Instead, the liberalism of Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin and the best of the revolution. There's a lot of horrible stuff to complain about, the revolutionaries and the founders and whatever, I'm not saying that, but that tradition, that Enlightenment tradition of that era of the American Revolution, you know. And I think I forgot what my point was now. I was making fun of Cass Sunstein. So Ron Paul reminded all the kids that if you believe in liberalism at its very core, as in liberty for people, as in screw you, King of England, we all are self-evidently equally as divine as you, you bastard. If you believe like that, you don't have to be a socialist. You don't have to be a liberal or a progressive of any kind. You could be an individualist. You could be a free marketeer. And boy, then once you learn that the Great Depression was caused by the government, not by the free market, and that the government New Deal that saved us from the Great Depression actually just made it worse all along and whatever, huh? And you see what a disaster the entire national government is, the entire welfare state, the entire educational system, the entire everything, and the broken budget, and the now, what, going on $18 trillion debt? And see what a mess it all is. You could decide to be a libertarian. Pretty damn easy. So that's got the Salon.coms of the world, man, all bent out of shape as hell, man. And they just keep attacking libertarianism like we're the ones in power. They're attacking libertarianism like Ron Paul won. When it's the Democrats this whole time. But man, they're afraid of us. And it's because their belief system is bankrupt and stupid. How could you want the butchers of Iraq to be the ones caring for your children's health? Are you stupid or what? How stupid are you? Yeah, I want the most violent, vicious, murderous thieves, the most corrupt, the worst men in the world, the rulers of the government of the USA. I want them
to be my daddy and to take good, good care of me and to ensure every good outcome. What did everybody say when the, or what did every liberal say when the chemical tank broke in West Virginia? Oh, a bad thing happened in the world. If only the state had just been a bit more total at that time and place. They would have prevented this from happening. Well, they're the ones who didn't, right? They're the ones who gave the licenses to this company to put their chemical plant upstream from the nearest town. It happened on their watch. But that doesn't prove anything. And these, of course, are the same people, and it's the environmental regulations, of course, are the reason why there's no liability. Right? The government, first of all, their bankruptcy procedures and their limited liability corporation fictions that they create for these businesses so that no individuals can be held responsible. But not even that. Their immunity from lawsuit at any time in any place. Well, the local hippies are concerned about their water supply. Well, Your Honor, we were inspected by the local, state, federal environmental inspectors, and they gave us a happy face on our report cards. So, I don't think that you're saying that the government is incompetent doing their job, are you, Your Honor? And then Your Honor bangs his gavel and dismisses the case. And the regulation was made to be captured. The regulation is the shield that protects the corrupt polluter from the individual in the first place. Of course, you don't even need government courts to have real lawsuits. Although, if you had the most minimal state without a regulatory state, but with just basic civil court system, at least, you know, solve that problem. But what do we hear? First of all, oh my God, a thing happened. If only we had lived in totalitarian Nazi Germany, where the Gestapo had unlimited authority over everything, then we never would have had a chemical spill. It's the slightest bit of freedom in West Virginia is what caused this, and we've got to stamp it out. And then they wonder why the young don't want to grow up to be like them. Then they wonder why people are looking for an alternative. And so this is just their rear guard action. How to spot a paranoid libertarian. Why libertarians just want your grandmother to starve to death in the street in the cold pouring down rain. Yeah, yeah. Be afraid, liberals. Be very afraid. Because we're better than you on everything that you're actually good on at all. Just like we're better than the right at everything that they're actually good on at all. And everything I just said about the left goes for the right as well. Who would want to be a Paul Ryan conservative when you could be a Ron Paulian libertarian? Makes no sense at all. In fact, someone might ask Rand Paul that very same question. But anyway, conservatism is just communism for right-wingers. Conservatism is just the worship of the state. In fact, I think that really conservatism is ultimately more statist than communism. As Anthony Gregory, I think, might put it, the communists have adopted the conservative means of using the state to achieve all their ends. Otherwise, they'd be liberals with a pipe dream, you know. But it's all that force that makes them, the conservatives' force, that makes them so horrible. And, of course, what conservatives believe is that everyone else is their property. And whatever it is about you that they don't like is within their jurisdiction. Whether you're gay or whether you like to smoke weed or whether you don't want to go and kill somebody that they want you to go and kill. Or whatever it is. They don't even like it when you talk in ways that they don't like to hear you talking. And liberals are like that too, don't get me wrong. Virtually any criticism of the left or the right can be applied to the vice versa too. But conservatives really like to think that they're not a bunch of commies. But I say you are. You believe in the USA, you're a commie. What's the USA? Other than
a big Leninist commonwealth of perpetual revolution. Perpetual theft. Okay, it's not exactly Leninism. But it shares a lot. It shares a body count with Leninism. You know? It surely provides for a lot higher standard of living for most, on this side of the lines anyway. But America always has focused most of its violence outward. Anyway. Liberalism isn't conservatism, they're just stupid. And that's why Cass Sunstein is so desperate to outlaw speech he doesn't like. You know, just think about how it was. You may be too young to even think about how it was to remember, but I remember how it was when there was no Google to check anything. There was no Google. And when media consisted of the local newspaper and maybe the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal and, you know, rather Jennings Brokaw and Lehrer, McNeil Lehrer. And that was it for TV news. And that was it. And there's no talking back to them. There's no tweeting back at them about what liars they were. And the internet has helped level the playing field and has given libertarians a voice in the phony left-right debates, and we're creaming them. And so they're terrified because we're the ones who are right, and so winning is a lot easier for us, you know? One hand behind our back. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for CashIntoCoins.com. So you want to buy some bitcoins? CashIntoCoins.com makes it easy and 100% anonymous. Just deposit the money into their account at any Bank of America, Wells Fargo, or credit union with shared branching, and then just email them a picture of the receipt with your Bitcoin address and you get your bitcoins. A simple, clean, anonymous way to get bitcoins. In a tough, competitive new market, CashIntoCoins.com has the advantage. A great system and great customer service to keep you coming back. That's CashIntoCoins.com. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. Man, I'm sorry about the phone system not working. I had no indication that it was going to go all hooey on me. God dang dang. I wonder what it is. It's got to be that there's a plug that ain't plugged in all the way somewhere in the chain. There's a few plugs in the chain, though. I'm going to have to go back and try and fix it later. But anyway, well, we'll have interviews tomorrow. That's all right. This guy wrote some good stuff about the missile defense, so should be a good interview. I need to look at my notes more because I wanted to talk about the things that I wrote down that I would want to remember to talk about. Like Liz Cheney swears she's coming back. She's gonna wait 6 years, maybe. I guess she'll run for the House in 2, probably, maybe in 4, and then she'll run for the Senate once Enzi's gone in another 6, or maybe he'll retire early. Or something. But she's hell-bent, she says. And that just terrifies me. Seriously. I mean, because she's what? She's only like 49 or something. She could live for decades. Decades. As an American senator. With those bloody mitts. On the grip of America's curse. And she's just a horrible, despicable, terrible person, and she's for everything that is evil and horrible and wrong. She's just a horrible, horrible person. She's Dick Cheney's daughter, and she loves him. That ought to be enough right there. She ain't the estranged one. She's the one who wants to fight with you about how great he is, and how great torture is. How great tapping your phone is. And how despicable her own sister is. If that's what she thinks you want to hear. That's what you want to hear, right? You hate gay people and you want to hear that I hate my gay sister? And the people of Wyoming were like, what? Dude, we hate people who betray their own sister a lot more than we hate gay sisters of people. Are you kidding me? What the hell is the matter with you? Disgusting woman. Disgusting. She's like Hillary Clinton, but worse. Much worse. Can you imagine a person being worse than Hillary Clinton? And one that looks just like her. It's amazing. All right. Well, anyway. Also, I wanted to say that I'm done talking about that. I can't bear the thought of it, honestly. I don't want to think about it anymore. How about this to say? On Saturday, I interviewed a guy named Peter Allen Lloyd. And on Sunday morning, I played it on my radio show on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, still called Anti-War Radio. And so here's the thing about that. It was pretty good. And in fact, he even said to me after the show that it's interesting to talk it out. He's written about this stuff for years, but he's never had a chance to attempt to articulate it out loud. He just doesn't discuss these things with any of his friends that he, you know, hangs around with in Thailand or whatever. It's not their thing or whatever. So this was his first big chance to say all the stuff he's been writing for years out loud. Anyway, I'm off the point. The point is this, and I don't know if these numbers are really right, but you know what? Round off. You know, take away a few percentage points. Do whatever you want and tell me what number you're still left with. The estimate right now is that America left 80 million undetonated bombs, undetonated bombies, bomblets, cluster bomb units laying on the ground all over Laos. Never even mind Cambodia. I think that's just Laos. I think that number doesn't include Cambodia and Vietnam. And so, and the way it was they estimated, well, they dropped this many hundred million, I think it was, whatever, you do the math, I forgot, then divide by three, because 30% of them were duds. 30% of the cluster bomb units were duds. So, and then, so that equaled out to, I'm not doing arithmetic for you live on the damn radio, but that equaled out to approximately somewhere on the order of high tens of millions of so-called duds. That is, cluster bomb units that have not exploded yet. And these things don't go bang like, the kind of grenade that went off on the A-team or whatever, where every stuntman just has to jump and do a somersault. These are shrapnel bombs that tear people limb from limb, that tear their bodies apart, tear their limbs off, tear their heads off, tear their guts out, mutilate them to death. And they go off hundreds of times per year. Hundreds. Laotians die by the hundreds every year since 1965 or whatever. The whole time. I mean, back then it was by the zillions. But since the war ended, they've kept dying and dying and dying. And come on, man. You know, I'm sorry, because I hate sentimentalism and whatever, because it doesn't work on me very well. So just take it for what it is. It's still, it's something. It's meaningful. That, you know, the people who pick these things up are little kids. That's who's stupid enough to pick up a cluster bomb after they've already been warned. A five-year-old is stupid enough. So it's a five-year-old who gets cut limb from limb by these things. Or it's a farmer with his ox, you know, the one piece of machinery he's got that works, an ox to pull his plow, to plant his food, to feed his people. And the cluster bomb goes off and kills the ox and kills the farmer. And this happens hundreds of times a year from Johnson and Nixon's secret war in Laos. And the one that nobody really cares about that much because, of course, the war was named the Vietnam War, so it gets all the attention. And then you hear about, yeah, the bombing, a secret bombing of Cambodia, man, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and the rise of the Khmer Rouge, right? Nobody ever really talks that much about the perpetual bombing for 9 years, he said. Peter Allen Lloyd, for 9 years. America bombed the Plain of Jars and anywhere else on the Ho Chi Minh Trail that could try to bomb. And they paid off all the Laotian princes to allow it to happen. And then, of course, so that led to their downfall as well and the rise of the Pathet Lao, the communists that took over Laos.
And that doesn't get as much coverage as Pol Pot, I guess, because Pol Pot just, Jesus, man, that ain't even communism. That's just, well, it is communism, but it's also just a goddamn crazy madman murder spree, too. And I guess the path at Laos weren't that bad, as far as I know. But anyway, Laos doesn't get the attention. But just think about that. And, you know, I'm sorry for repeating myself if you already heard the interview. But, man, a few hundred people a year, that's how many Americans died in Afghanistan at the height of the surge, at the height of Obama's surge in 2010, 11, 12. Remember? 300-400 guys dying a year, and that was a lot in the Afghan war. But they were combatants in a volunteer army. Not that they weren't betrayed and lied to and used and thrown away like garbage, but still, there's a qualitative difference between signing up to go to a war zone and being injured, like was always a possibility in the cards, versus just being some poor kid who happens to be born to a mom who happened to be born in Laos, where playing outside means maybe, just maybe, you'll trip over a half-buried cluster bomb that'll maim you to death hundreds of times a year. It's incredible, man. It's just absolutely incredible. And, you know, the only reason that Americans can tell themselves all this stuff about exceptionalism and greatness and beauty and what's America other than our wonderful Hollywood movies we love so much and whatever is just out of pure ignorance. And people just have no idea of this kind of thing. But that just is insane. And I know that this sounds insane to somebody who's just, you know, a typical talk radio Republican listener out there, but the entire military of America ought to be put to use cleaning up the leftover explosives from our last few wars. The Europeans, they can afford cleaning up their own mess, or our mess still, you know, left over from World War II or wherever, if they've got it. Screw them. But in Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia, in Kosovo and in Iraq and Serbia and in Iraq and Afghanistan, the U.S. government, if it's to exist, if people are going to keep signing up for this standing army, they ought to be put to work cleaning up unexploded ordnance, walking around with wet washcloths, wiping up depleted uranium dust. Real reparations for what they've done. I don't really believe that. I think the U.S. government should be abolished. But I think American soldiers should volunteer to go do stuff like that, at least, man. American billionaires should pay. Hey, y'all, Scott here. So you made a little bit of money in this horrid economy, only to find that the Fed has more or less outlawed saving. So into the treacherous waters of the stock market bubble you go. But how to make a little money without too much risk of losing it all? Check out WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson is a successful former hedge fund manager who opens a very real window into his main account, updating his subscribers on the facts of and the reasoning behind all his market moves. Follow along on paper or with real money and see what happens at WallStreetWindow.com. What was the only interest group in D.C. pushing war with Syria last summer? AIPAC and the Israel lobby. What's the only interest group in D.C. pushing to sabotage the nuclear deal with Iran right now? AIPAC and the Israel lobby. Why doesn't the president force an end to the occupation of Palestine, a leading cause of terrorist attacks against the United States? AIPAC and the Israel lobby. The Council for the National Interest is pushing back, putting America first and educating the people about what's really at stake in the Middle East. Help support their important work at councilforthenationalinterest.org.
I do know that I am old.
It's not that bad. I can still do a frontside rock. I say, as long as I can still do a frontside rock, then I'm still me. I ain't that old. Not that far over the hill yet. Not quite yet.
I'm getting that. Don't tell the gray hairs on my chin. They'll lie to you and try to deceive you and tell you that I'm older than I really am. Keep that thing shaved close.
All right, well, so I'm Scott, and this is my show, The Scott Horton Show. I sit here and complain about foreign policy mostly. And I do interviews, mostly. I didn't have much time today. Well, I did have lots of time, but I didn't spend it very wisely, I guess. I didn't put my show together very well. And then the one guest I did have, well, that didn't work out because his goddamn phone ain't working right. I don't know what's wrong with it. I hope I don't need a whole new phone patch or something. I think it's probably just a loose thingamajig somewhere.
Although, you know, the way he sounded... What does that remind me of? It reminds me of a screw-up somewhere on AT&T's part of the chain, right? It's got to just be a plug, man. I don't know. Maybe it's a bad circuit in my phone patch. That would suck and cost a bunch of money, but all right. All right. Well, it's going to... Yeah. All right, now here's this. I am not warning you that this is about to happen or something, because that's stupid. And I sure as hell ain't promoting it, because that's even dumber. But I do want to point out this article about these generals, and it's just a couple of them, and real cranky ones. Retired generals talking about deposing Obama. So let's see. I guess Boykin says that a lot of guys in the military sure would like to take out the president, but then he adds that, well, you know, but the Constitution puts a civilian in charge, and so a coup would not be constitutional, so we can't do it. But otherwise we would, because the president is so damn unconstitutional, I guess, is the theory here. And so that's Boykin, but he's a crank, and I don't think pretty much anybody's listened to him in quite a while. And then the same thing for Vallely, General Vallely. You'll see him on Fox News, or you used to see him on Fox News anyway. But he was saying something like that too about how I don't think he added the caveat. It says here former Fox News contributor. He was talking with an Arizona-based Tea Party group, and he, I guess, volunteered this. It's not in response to a question, I don't think. He said, I had a call this afternoon from Idaho. The gentleman said, if I give you 250,000 Marines to go to Washington, will you lead them? Vallely, who was Fox News' senior military analyst during the Iraq War, told the group, I said, yes, I will. I'll surround the White House, and I'll surround the Capitol building. It's going to take physical presence to do things. And now, so, I think that quote is out of context, because as crazy as this guy is, there's nothing explicitly, mentioned there about them being an armed force. He's just talking about doing a million vet march kind of thing, really. I don't know. Anyway, I just kind of like how people get to, right-wingers, they claim they love America, American freedom and the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and all this stuff. Well, first of all, you never hear them talk like that when Republicans are in power, other than to say that unlimited power keeps us safe, keeps our freedom safe, but they don't ever want to define it. They don't ever want to talk about what's actually in the Bill of Rights at all when Republicans are in power. And then when liberal Democrats are in power, they like to pretend that they're all kind of libertarian and anti-government and whatever. But you see where their heart really is, a lot of them. Over here at the Last Great Stand, they get really excited about the idea of the generals crossing the river, breaking into the White House and pushing the president out of the chair and taking over the country. Boy, yeah, that Barack Obama, he sure does violate the Constitution a lot. Enough that, yeah, we're going to just not have elections anymore. We're just going to have, General whoever the hell declare himself president for life. Anyway, right-wingers, man. So I'm telling you, man, right-wingers, they're like left-wingers, only even more commie than that, really. Or I don't know. I think they're always racing to see who can be the worst on matters of human rights, really. And they were making a big deal about this over there at the Last Great Stand. They're making a big deal about the fact that Mattis was thrown out last year. General Mattis was thrown out because he was pushing back on Iran. But what's funny about that is they implied that, like, oh, yeah, because Barack Obama is this Muslim traitor sellout on Iran or something like that. And the hero, Marine, tough guy, general Mattis was so combative with them about their stance that they had to get rid of him.
because they were selling out America. That's the implication, the way they write it. But, of course, what happened was Mattis kept saying, oh, so you want to mess with Iran, huh? Then what happens? Uh-huh. And then if they do this, then what are you going to do? And if they do this, what are you going to do then? And he would just do nothing but red team the NSC as they talked about all the great stuff that they wanted to do with their stupid Iran policies. And Mattis, who was the commander of CENTCOM, was shooting them down, forcing them to cool their jets or whatever, to back down, to cool out. In fact, that must have been a big part of the decision to go ahead and send William Burns on to go and start negotiating in Oman last year. That the military is pushing back on this hard. They don't want a conflict here. They want a deal. We got no choice. We're up against the wall of our own hype. We've got to make a change now. So the change will have to be a deal. And I guess they got mad at him for being such a pain, but they're making the deal. Anyway, funny, though, the way the right-wingers are spinning it there. Like, oh, yeah, Barack Obama, the traitor with his fake birth certificate, the commie Muslim revolutionary usurper of John McCain's rightful throne. Oh, they don't say that, but that's what they mean. We love America. We love the Constitution so much. We want to not have elections anymore. Yeah, instead of having political parties and nominees and elections, we'll just have a general decide everything for us from now on. Because you know those generals, they sure do love America. People like General Vallely. He'd make a great decision maker for everyone, don't you think? And again, I'm not saying, oh, this is a real danger, but I am kind of making fun of what right-wingers think. The kinds of things that to them seem plausible. And especially, isn't it funny how even in 2014 they look at Barack Obama and they think he's a Black Panther? This guy works for Wall Street still, like he always did. This guy works for big insurance, big pharma, big cop, big national security state, big agribusiness, big telecoms. He's a fascist. He's George W. Bush, only a little bit taller and a little bit darker. Did you really think that he was something outside of a centrist? He's a right-wing Democrat, just like John McCain is a left-wing, or, you know, he's a conservative Democrat, sort of right-wing, you know, I understand what I mean. Conservative Democrat, the mirror image of John McCain's liberal Republican, other than the fact that McCain is actually, personally, individually, a madman, but just as far as his cookie-cutter shape, he's exactly the exact same thing. In fact, if anything, I think you'd have to argue that on foreign policy, the Democrats are better. I don't think the Republicans, I can't imagine, you know, I don't think even Rand Paul would have done this. He's horrible on Iran. He didn't come out against the sanctions till Harry Reid already announced that he was going to not schedule him for a vote. Just like Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton came out, oh yeah, hey everybody look at me, I'm against sanctions, I support the president's approach toward dealing with Iran. Oh really, you do, huh? That's why you've been silent this whole time. The president's former Secretary of State hasn't had a word of support to say to try to convince her former fellow senators, her good friends in the Senate, to go along with the president and her successor and good friend John Kerry on this. Only after the bill's already dead in the Senate does she come out against it. Just like Rand Paul. I mean, at least he didn't co-sponsor the thing. But then, oh, as soon as Harry Reid, not even as soon, it still took a few days. A few days after Harry Reid announced that he was not going to schedule a vote on the sanctions, Rand Paul let it be known that, oh, yeah, I'm against those sanctions. Yeah, great argument, dude. You really helped, you know, win that battle. Thank goodness. You know, those sanctions that are meant to botch and destroy the Iran deal and its crib. Sorry, that's a bad metaphor. You don't destroy things in their crib. You kill them in their crib, or yeah, whatever. Anyway, That's what the sanctions are meant to do, to cancel the Iran deal, to force the Iranians to say, oh yeah, well then we quit. So they can say, see, we tried to deal with them, but they're just too irrational. Don't they know they're supposed to bend over and take every bit of it and love it? By the way, did you see this one at the Liberty Crier this morning? The video of the cops on the school bus, who the boy's kind of crying and upset and doesn't want to get off the school bus, 13-year-old, 14-year-old kid. So the cop breaks his arm, his upper arm, snaps it like a twig. Bam! Big old steroid shooting cop, fresh home from killing Afghans, taking it out on your boy on the school bus. Sometimes I like throwing in little things like that at the very end when we're going out to break.
So you're a libertarian, and you don't believe the propaganda about government awesomeness you were subjected to in fourth grade. You want real history and economics. Well, learn in your car from professors you can trust with Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom. And if you join through the Liberty Classroom link at scotthorton.org, we'll make a donation to support the Scott Horton Show. Liberty Classroom, the history and economics they didn't teach you.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. I'm here live from 3 to 5. Whoa, I need to turn this down a little bit. Maybe quit yelling so loud or something. I'm here live from 3 to 5 Eastern Time, weekdays, Monday through Friday, here on the Liberty Express, libertyexpressradio.com. And also over at dailypaul.com, Daily Paul Radio, that is, dailypaulradio.com. And then, yeah, I keep all my interview archives and my whole show archives and my blog and my articles and my everything over at scotthorton.org. I got a talking problem, and I got 3,000 interviews now, more, going back to 2003 there at scotthorton.org. And in fact, I'm writing it on my hand right now. Today, maybe, supposedly, the ones from 03 through 06 will start working again. They've been broken links for a little while. The vast majority are from January 07 on. But anyway, 3,000 interviews there. They're all at scotthorton.org. And check out the chat room, man. I'm hanging out in the chat room. I'm looking at different Q-Burks arguing about politics and things. That's good. So that's scotthorton.org/chat. I try to keep my eye on it all day during the show. And so, yeah, that's cool. And then follow me on Facebook. Like me on Facebook. Hey, go and like me. I'm on Facebook at facebook.com/Scott Horton Show. facebook.com/Scott Horton Show. And then you can follow me on Twitter. That's twitter.com/Scott Horton Show. And then also on YouTube, you can subscribe to me at youtube.com/Scott Horton Show. And then I'm on Tumblr. But it's some weird thing. I think it's tumblr.com/blog/Scott Horton Show. But that's just, it's just re-putting out every tweet or whatever. It's stupid. I don't even understand what Tumblr is. I think it's the same thing as Medium. Do I got to be on that thing, Medium? Hey, chat room guys, are you young, any of you? Do you know if I'm supposed to be on this Medium thing or if I should not care? Because I should have been on Twitter earlier than I was because I didn't know it was a thing. I don't know. I guess I am old. What's it like to be old? Well, when you're old, when something like Medium comes out, you don't know what to do with it. Something or not. You ask someone younger what they think. That's what it's like to be old. Okay. Hey, I want to make fun of Hillary Clinton. Man, I want to make fun of this girl. What's her name? Ha ha. Some people are so ridiculous. Dude. Let me see. What's this person? Who is this ridiculous person? It's taking me a second. Here we go. Oh, she's a nice girl. Usa Sahay. She is Director of Digital Outreach at Council for a Livable World. An editor of War on the Rocks. I don't know what that is. Anyway, hang on. I really shouldn't drink Dr. Pepper during the show. So here's the thing about her. So I tweeted out this thing, making fun of how Hillary Clinton came out way after the fact, saying, oh yeah, I'm against the Iran sanctions. Oh yeah, I support my president, who I was just the Secretary of State for a few months ago, on this. after the bill was already dead. And so she says something. Oh, but yeah, but she wrote the letter back on January 26th. And I said, yeah, but Harry Reid announced the bill was going nowhere back on January 14th. So she waited 12 days, and then she wrote a letter that surfaced in another week or 10 days saying, oh, yeah, by the way, I'm against those sanctions that are already dead. Wowee, I'm so impressed with her peacenik credentials there. And then, so she said, by that logic, the bill was dead by the time... it was the letter that she got from the senator. She was dead, anyway, so... But she could have been out there, out front, all along, is the obvious point. And in fact, then, even after she got the letter, and the bill was already dead, she still waited. It was a letter from Levin asking her opinion. She didn't volunteer it, he asked her. But she still waited and waited and waited. And anyway... So, I couldn't figure this out. I don't know why. I don't even know how this Miss Sahay found my tweet anyway, because she's not following me. I don't think. Anyway. But so, then what was funny was, there's an article at the National Interest called Hillary the Hawk with a question mark. And then, it's an article, and it's by this Miss Sahay, the same person who is tweeting me about in fairness to Hillary Clinton and what a dove she is. And then this article is about what a dove she is. Seriously. It's called Hillary the Hawk with a question mark. Now, of course, if you just put in Hillary the Hawk, the first thing that'll come up is just a Raimondo. Hillary the Hawk without the question mark. Hillary Clinton has been for every war, starting with Waco. You know, she was pushing Bill Clinton to hurry up and get this Waco thing out of the way. God dang it, what a crappy way to start out a presidency. Way back in 1993. And then she supported intervention in the Balkans in 94 and 95. She supported the Iraq policy all along. Obviously, Bill Clinton's genocide against the Iraqis killed nearly a million of them, 500,000 children, which she was part of. I don't remember her resigning from her marriage to a genocidal maniac in disgust or anything like that, do you? Although maybe she did start, you know, holding out on him. Maybe at the war crimes trial, she can bring that out in the sentencing and the mitigating circumstances. Hey, after Bill had killed his first 250,000 children, I quit blowing him. Because I got principles. You know, something like that. Anyway, it would explain a lot. But anyway, so she stayed part of that administration. According to her, the first lady is in office in the government. That's her standard, so I hold her guilty for being a co-criminal with Bill Clinton all that time. And then, of course, she was the one, she bragged to her biographer, Gail Sheehy. Gail, G-A-I-L, Sheehy. Really, not he-she. Sheehy. Gail Sheehy. Hillary bragged that she was the one who made Bill. She hectored Bill into bombing Kosovo in 1999. That was his, remember, his victory lap after being, after the Senate refused to remove him from office. He went and took America to war on his own say-so and started bombing Kosovo. Oh, they deliberately, I mean, they created a peace agreement that was absolutely designed, and they admitted it was designed to be an offer that Milosevic cannot possibly accept. So that will give us only one option, airstrikes. But don't worry, we're just going to bomb them for about 3 or 4 days, and then they're going to do whatever we say. And then, of course, that lasted for 2.5 months. Bombed the hell out of everybody, killed more than 1,000 people, a few thousand people, and created hundreds of thousands of refugees. And anyway, and Hillary Clinton bragged that she was the one who made Bill do it. That was actually, like, they're making up after the Lewinsky scandal and Bill Clinton's impeachment trial was, listen, if you want me, you know, you want to come in from the doghouse, you better start bombing Kosovo. And then as soon as she became a senator, her first priority is getting on the Armed Services Committee so she can have these national security bona fides so that she can be the president. And then she supported the war with Iraq. And this, again, is a lady who was married to Bill Clinton. And had, obviously, she's a senator on the Foreign Relations Committee. She had every opportunity to know the true strength of the Iraqi regime. And to know exactly what was going on there. Not like, you know, your Uncle Bob, who believed a bunch of crap that they said on his AM radio. Or, you know, saw on Fox News. She was married to the last president at the time. And voted for that war. And then refused to apologize for it. Instead, what'd she do? She passed the buck. Oh, all I did was give him the authorization to go to war. I didn't tell him to go to war with the authorization to go to war that I gave him. Are you kidding me? And of course, you know, never mind her voting record. Her voting record is 4444444444 every bit of the American empire in every and all circumstances, including the surge in Iraq and including the surge in Afghanistan. And then she's the one who started the war in Libya. Barack Obama had Samantha Power, you know, Cass Sunstein's wife. She was tired of doing do-gooder, rinky-dink stuff. That's a direct quote. That's not me talking. She was tired of doing do-gooder, rinky-dink stuff as the deputy assistant undersecretary of nothing on the National Security Council. She wanted attention. She wanted to be somebody. She wanted the president to pat her on the head, and she wanted people to write about her in the newspaper so she could be really special, just like she always wanted to be when she was a little girl. And so she hectored Obama into war. She hectored Hillary into hectoring Obama into war, and Susan Rice along with her. And Robert Gates said, don't do it. But Obama went with Hillary Clinton. And then upon leaving office, what's the first thing she did when she left office? At the beginning of last year, she puts an article in the New York Times saying, I wanted to arm the Syrian rebels. I was trying to get David Petraeus and Leon Panetta, and they agreed with me, and we all wanted to do it, and Obama wouldn't do it because he's such a sissy. Obama backed down because of his cowardice. I'm the tough guy. I'm the 3 a.m. call. Hillary Clinton put in the New York Times. And this USA Sahay is trying to push that Hillary Clinton? Seriously, of all people in the entire world, to try to cast as a dove. Hillary Clinton, really. I'm sure we'll be seeing Miss Sahay as the deputy assistant undersecretary of doing what Hillary Clinton says. In the, Hillary Paul administration, when Rand Paul runs as her running mate, since he wants to be exactly like her in so many ways. You know, like his position on Iran sanctions. Refused to stake one until it's already too late, for one example. His position on staying in Afghanistan for another. His position on actually, she's better on Guantanamo Bay than he is, of course. And then we could go on, couldn't we? So there you go. USA Sahay has an article in the National Interest called Hillary, please hire me in case you become president. I would love to work with you and earn money and maybe have an opportunity to exercise power. Please. Here. I'm going to write this article about how you're really kind and soft and loving. All right, Bill. I'll put out, if you bomb Kosovo, that's a direct quote. Can you imagine that? These people. Oh, man. And, you know, here's the other thing. Got me agreeing with Barbara Bush. Got Barbara Bush even agreeing with me about enough of these dynasties. Why do we need a Clinton or a Bush of any description anywhere near political power again, or a Cheney? Out of 300 million Americans, these are the only people that our democracy can find to help run the place? Something must not be quite right here. Hey, y'all, Scott here. Man, I had a chance to have an essay published in the book Why Peace, edited by Mark Gutman, but I didn't understand what an opportunity it was. Boy, do I regret I didn't take it. This compendium of thoughts by the greatest anti-war writers and activists of our generation will be remembered and studied long into the future. You've got to get Why Peace. You've got to read Why Peace. It features articles by Harry Brown, Robert Naiman, Fred Bronfman, Dahlia Wasfi, Richard Cummings, Karen Kotowski, Butler Schaefer, Kathy Kelly, Robert Higgs, Anthony Gregory, and so many more. Why Peace? Because war is the health of everything wrong with our society. Get Why Peace. Down at the bookshop or Amazon.com. Just click the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org. Hey, sorry. Dang it, that commercial was too quiet, and then I forgot to turn the thing down. And never did. Yeah. Hardly do. All right. So, yeah, I did get a chance to mention the cop breaking the kid's arm. You got to see that footage, man, at LibertyCrier.com. They do a great job of covering police abuse stories there. LibertyCrier.com. That's Trevor Lyman. Great libertarian activist Trevor Lyman there. And, man, yeah. I don't know. What was the kid doing on a government school bus in the first place? That's my question. Why would his parents have given him over to the government to have educated? I'd never heard of that. Had you ever heard of that? Did you know that the government had schools now? And that people would prefer to send their children off to a government school rather than a privately owned one, or schooling them at home? What the hell kind of sense does that make? I've never heard of such a thing. That people must really hate their kids. And hey, I can understand. I mean, some people are scumbags. I guess they must be scumbags when they're kids too. And then their parents hate their scumbag kids and put them in a government school, right? What other reason would a parent put their child in a government school unless they hate them? Unless they want to see their own children's arms broken. Well, you know, I sent Johnny off to government school and he came home with his arm broken. And I'm absolutely shocked and surprised. What is this? A totalitarian police state? This is the first I've heard of this. So you're telling me then that the government is my enemy, and that I would have to be a damned fool to turn my child over to the enemy for 8 hours a day, every day, for 12 years of his life? Huh. You know, I'm shocked and surprised. And anyway, so, look, what did you think the cop was going to do? Stop short of breaking the kid's arm, because that would be going too far? But what if the cop wanted to break the kid's arm? Did you ever think of that? Yeah, see? That's the flaw in your whole theory right there. The cop wanted to break the kid's arm, so he broke the kid's arm. And it's funny, too, because the cop doesn't say, oh, man, oops, I'm sorry, crap, you shouldn't have moved left like that. You jerked to the left, kid. I'm sorry about your arm. Like, there's nothing like that. There's just like, yep, that's right. That's what you get for resisting, boy. And they charged him with obstructing the official implementation of regulations. Wait, what is it? They charged him with something like that. Wait, where's the goddamn charge, Bobby? Here, I'm gonna find it. They charged him with... Well, I guess I'm gonna have to play the audio then. Where'd the video go? Here we go. At the end, the news guy explains.
Do this.
Oh. Oh, God!
Oh, no, that's just the kid screaming about his broken arm.
Step down.
Oh!
Boy, those cops sure look like they've been pumping each other in steroids all morning. What happened to the news story? I had one that was, it was the news report about it, where they talked about the charge was obstructing the implementation, official implementation of regulations. Something like that. Well, you know, they used to try to take obstruction of justice and then just shorten that to obstruction and pretend like resisting anything about any of their behavior amounted to obstruction of justice. But then I think there was a little bit of pushback like that, because actually obstruction of justice has an actual definition that is much more specific than just not doing what I say when I say. But anyway, you can walk off this bus like a young man, or we can hogtie you. And then they break his arm and drag him off. He gives up after they break his arm. He cries uncle, so to speak. More like just, ah. Anyway, they're cops. They can break whoever's arm they want. If you don't like it, you can move away to another country. Isn't that the rules? Government can do anything they want because freedom. And if you don't like it, you can leave. They can torture you to death because freedom. They can read your every email. They can save your every movement for years worth of cell phone ownership on end. Because freedom. And if you don't like it, you can leave. If you don't like it, you know what you should do? You should write an article about what a nice lady Hillary Clinton is and see if she'll give you a job exercising power over others. And then you can settle for having power instead of liberty to do what you want. You can just force other people to do what you want them to do, too. Make up for your lack of freedom. Does that sound like a fair enough compromise? Oh, I like this. This is about 100 years too late here. Well, no, 15, 20 years too late. Red Flex Traffic Systems is busted in a $2 million bribery scandal in Chicago. Isn't this so easy to see? Conservatism. It's communism for right-wingers. That's all it is. You own a business. You make cameras. What do? You pay off government with a tiny little bit of money to guarantee you a permanent, gigantic flow of free money from the people that the government owns and is free to exploit at any moment. I think I mentioned this the other day where Bill Burr, the comedian, maybe I didn't mention this. I listened to this podcast where Bill Burr, the comedian, was ranting about Stephen Molyneux. And Stephen Molyneux, if you're not familiar, is a libertarian philosopher type guy, does podcasts and what have you, speeches, and I guess writings too. Yeah, he wrote a book. So he has this thing about human farming and about how the state, basically, they're the slave masters on the human plantation, and that those of us who aren't the top half of 1% or the government employees themselves, we're the livestock. And they let us have as much freedom as we have in the same way that people let cows get themselves fat because it just makes them more riper for the plucking. These people don't create all the wealth. The people create all the wealth. They got to let us create wealth for them to suck off of. But ultimately, we're all at least, you know, whatever percent slaves, even though slavery is more a matter of quality than quantity. But you can put a number on it if you try. And anyway, and Bill Burr, he was put off by Molyneux's attitude, I guess, too early to get to the part about he's just ranting about the state. And he's ranting about the private interests that control the state and use the state and are guilty as hell of being in on it with the state. But his point was about the state. And Bill Burr immediately just assumed that what Molyneux was complaining about was that people are really, really rich sometimes. And that they somehow are ultimately all exploiting us. And so then therefore, you know, the poor ought to eat all the rich and whatever, as though Molyneux was a commie. But libertarian class theory is very, well, it sounds somewhat like left class theory, I guess. It just, that is that where we differ is in coercion versus not coercion. The economic versus the political means of making money. And so anyway, what America is really, you know, America's economy is not really a capitalist economy. It is in some ways, but mostly it's a fascist economy where the private interests control the government in order to control the private interests, which want it that way because they get to be the ones in charge anyway. And it's all about preventing competition and rent-seeking, collecting welfare. So seriously, man, if your company made good quality digital cameras and your team knew networking math really well and whatever, wouldn't you bribe Chicago a couple of $1 million so that your company can make billions? You'd be a fool not to. You'd be giving the whole store away to your competitors. That's the entire name of the game. And goes back to that story from the other day we were talking about last Friday, and there's always 100 of these, about them in jurisdictions all across America where they have lowered and openly admitted it in some cases where it's not even a scandal, where they just say, yeah, we're shortening the yellow lights so that we can make more money. And, of course, that's just a fancy way of saying we are deliberately driving people out into oncoming traffic to be killed. Because most of them will just get a ticket and pay us. And we'll make more money by killing some. See? So they're just criminals. It was funny the other day when I was Peter Ludlow on the show, who's kind of a liberal, and he was talking about Locke versus Hobbes. And it seems to me like if you're Lockean, you gotta be a libertarian. He was saying, you know, yeah, torture's beyond the pale, but you know, the entire welfare and regulatory state and the this, that, and the other state, all of that's all legit. All of that's just fine. All that's just finally constitutional, perfectly constitutional and whatever. But why should that be when it's all coercion? When arrest is just kidnapping and taxation is just extortion if it was done by anybody else? Seriously, if they can legalize taxing someone, why can't they legalize torturing someone? What can't they do? If they can commit armed robbery, you've already given them license to be criminals and to act that way. That's how you end up with these Sunsteins who can't imagine life any other way other than, you know, being directed at the hands of our intellectual betters. All right. Well, see you tomorrow. I'll have some interviews for you.